Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Author Chats. I'm Elizabeth Kelly. Today we are happy to have with us the Honorable Frederick Block of the Eastern District of New York to speak with us about his wonderful new legal thriller titled Race to Judgment. Welcome, Your Honor.
Good to be with you, Elizabeth.
And it's good to have you back. Listeners of our show may remember your first appearance back in 2012 when you talked about your first book titled Disrobed, The Inside Look of a Federal Trial Court Judge. This book is a bit different. It's a legal thriller. It's a novel. It's a work of fiction largely based on reality. In 60 seconds or less, tell our listeners what the plot is.
Well, first, Elizabeth, I want to thank you for having me on your program again. I was basically motivated to write this book because I so much enjoyed being on your program 4 years ago that I had to find a way
well,
of coming back.
Well, thank you so much.
So what happened is this, basically. I've had a bunch of high-profile cases in the 23 years I've been a federal court judge in New York. And essentially, I was animated to put together some of these interesting cases I had and to fictionalize them to make what I thought would be a real good, interesting read. And at the same time, you know, toss out some real, real issues that really troubled me throughout the course of my career, like wrongful convictions and things of that nature, which have been a real problem in our country lately. So the protagonist is fashioned after a person named Kent Thompson, who tried a case before me many years ago when he was an assistant U.S. attorney in Brooklyn. And he became an active civil rights activist throughout the years in private practice and championed a lot of these causes, which we have read about in the newspaper, Stop and Frisks, and all sorts of things out there. And he campaigned against the sitting long-term district attorney in Brooklyn, who had been the DA for over 20 years, and he actually beat him in the Democratic primary. He became the first African-American district attorney in the history of Brooklyn. That really, you know, caught my attention. So that basically is the storyline, how the protagonist became the person who defeated the reigning district attorney, the issues that he campaigned on, the death threats and everything else that you read about in the book come together in what I think is a real interesting read. So that was basically what this is all about.
You mentioned that you sprinkled throughout the book issues that troubled you, like wrongful convictions. You also spend a good deal of time in the book discussing prosecutorial misconduct and the political background of so many of the prosecutions in Brooklyn where the book takes place. Given all that, why write a legal thriller? Why not write a scholarly nonfiction book?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because I wanted to use a vehicle which would attract as much public attention as possible and motivate people to read the book. If I wrote an academic book, there are lots of academic books that are written. It would be a value in the universities, law schools, by the legal community. But these are issues which really have a pervasive impact upon a society. And I thought by really making it into a good read, hopefully a page turner, that people would really get a good feel for what the dynamics are in terms of these issues, which are profound. Brooklyn has had 24 cases that have been overturned recently because of prosecutorial misconduct. It's not just Brooklyn, it's endemic. There's not a week that I don't read something in the paper about, you know, a wrongful conviction, people in jail, like in the Collins case in my book, 16 years. And I think this is a way of sort of in a sneaky way, you might say, calling attention to these issues in a way which would have a wider reader, wider reader, readership, I guess, than if it was an academic book.
If you've just tuned in, we're talking with the Honorable Frederick Block, a judge in the Eastern District of New York, about his legal thriller titled Race to Judgment. And, Your Honor, if our listeners want to learn more about you and your other writing, where should they go and what should they do?
Well, I hope they will. And so I had a website, and I was told I need a website, and it's a very valuable thing because it really contains everything that I've done, everything about the book. And it's Frederick, F-R-E-D-E-R-I-C, no K at the end of the first name, block, all one word, .com. And in there, you'll see lots of fun things. I've had great, great reviews, great stories written in the New York Times, the Wall Street Law Journal. Even the Sunday London Times wrote about all of this. I've been on television. You can see the TV interviews. I was on Fox in L.A., in New York. NBC did a special. So the one great thing about a website, it's a composite of all this information that, you know, anybody can read about me. And it also has the music. And, you know, I'm very, very proud of the fact that.
Yeah. You are much more than a judge or even a writer. Tell us about your life as a musician.
So I'm glad you asked me that question, because if you didn't ask me that question, I was going to tell you about it because I want people to know about what makes this book a little bit more unusual than what you're likely to read is that in the back, the appendix are the charts, the music that's in the book. So I made my protagonist a cross between Stevie Wonder and Hank Williams Jr., and his hobby is to write country music. And he plays them and he sings them at his local, you know, watering hole, which I talk about in the book. And I wrote that music. And actually, I sing three of the songs. So if you like country music, a couple of them are not country music songs, then you can easily get them on any streaming device. And you can get them, of course, through the web page as well. And I think it adds some fun to the book. I think it gives it a dimension. I think I can compete with John Grisham because I know that he can't play the piano.
There you have it. There you have it. And your accent is much different than Mr. Grisham's, I might add. Now, you have a character in the book titled Judge Black.
It's Judge Black. I've made it Judge Black. Of course, it's, you know, fashioned after me.
Yeah, I got that. And you portray Judge Black as really anguishing over one of the cases that comes before him, a wrongful conviction case, because Judge Black feels so constrained by the current state of the law, and in particular, the immunity given to law enforcement for their conduct. Given what you've previously described at the epidemic of wrongful convictions and prosecutorial misconduct in this country, how do we break out of those confines? How do we right so many wrongs?
Well, you know, it shows me that you read the book carefully, Elizabeth. I'm really, really grateful for that. But, yeah, it's a real endemic. It's a problem because under the law as it presently exists, prosecutors don't have any consequences. And, you know, they can't be prosecuted for wrongful convictions. They are given absolute immunity. So there's no disincentive for them. And they, unfortunately, in a number of cases, they embrace the ends justifying the means. They don't turn over exculpatory material. They don't tell the lawyer for the defendant that, you know, the main witness was lying and things of this nature. That has to change. They have to be held accountable for some level of accountability for, you know, just horrific prosecutorial misconduct. So that's the theme that goes throughout the book. I've written about the subject academically as well, and I think that there's real need for change there. And I think the book points out the problems if you're not held accountable as a prosecutor. We've had, as I say, 24 wrongful convictions have been unearthed in Brooklyn because of Ken Thompson's campaign, and that's highlighted in the book, and it makes for dramatic reading as well.
You used a term a few moments ago that some of our listeners may not be familiar with, the term exculpatory evidence. What is exculpatory evidence, and why is it so significant in the course of a criminal trial?
Well, for example, in the book, and it's really based upon a real case that I had, in the case of Jabbar Collins, who was in jail for 16 years for a crime he never committed, because witnesses who testified at his trial recanted. They told the prosecutors afterwards that they were not telling the truth. The reason why they were not telling the truth, I fictionalized it, you could read all about it, but basically that's true. The prosecutors never mentioned that to the defendant's attorney. So he was convicted, the defendant, based upon this false testimony. So to turn over information of that nature, we call that exculpatory material. It means it's information that could go towards getting a jury to say not guilty rather than guilty. And it's fundamental. It's a constitutional principle. You just can't do that.
And describe for our listeners the typical situation shown in the book and revealed, unfortunately, in many parts of the country where witnesses testify against the accused, and then several years, even decades, come forwards and say, that never really happened. I was forced to testify that way.
Well, you see, it's one thing for a witness to recant their testimony. Those things do happen. All sorts of things happen.
And recant basically means take back, correct?
The what?
Recant basically means take back, correct?
You can't take that back? What do you mean?
Recant means
that they have testified falsely. They come forward later on. They say, I didn't really mean it. But that's entirely different than the prosecutor knowing about that and not telling that or sharing that information with the defendant's attorney. Those are two different animals. So when we talk about prosecutorial misconduct, we talk about the prosecutor acting inappropriately. Witnesses recant or they change their testimony. You know, we get those types of cases, but sometimes we have hearings. We don't believe it necessarily. We don't change the result. But that's a far different animal than the fact that the prosecutor has basically a canned testimony, a subverted testimony, evidence, and that's something which is intolerable.
And a number of these guys in the book were basically threatened by law enforcement if they didn't testify in such a way, or they were promised something very sweet, like dismissal of their case or a significantly reduced prison sentence if they testified in such a way. How typical is that?
How typical is that? I don't know. It happens. I mean, we have all sorts of examples of things happening in our country, but it's not untypical. You know, all sorts of things happen in the course of criminal prosecutions and a person's life is at stake or liberty.
Final question for you, Your Honor. You preside over docket in your court. As you've told our listeners, you are also a musician. When on earth did you find time to write Race to Judgment?
Well, I read one place that the average person watches TV for 5 to 6 hours a day. And basically, if you just take that time and you write, you can write these books. No, I don't really. The truth of the matter is that when you're really motivated and when you're animated to do something, it's the old story. You have a job to do. You give it to a busy person. When you're turned on, when the head starts clicking in, things happen. It's amazing how productive you can be if you just don't become a couch potato. And if you don't watch so much TV. And, when you're motivated, you can find the time. And if you're not, you don't have passion in life about something, then you don't find the time for it. So I think it's more of a psychological dynamic than anything else, quite frankly.
Well, your passion for this topic and your passion for your characters certainly shines through in this book. We so appreciate your joining us. You are always fun to interview, and hope it's not another 5 years.
Well, no, I'm working on a couple of books right now so I can get back to talk to you folks again. And thanks ever so much for letting me have a chance to chat with you today. It's really enjoyable, and I'm glad I had the opportunity.
Thank you so much. Good having you. And thank you to all of my listeners. You've been listening to Author Chats, where we've been talking with the Honorable Frederick Block of the Eastern District of New York about his wonderful new legal thriller titled Race to Judgment. Please remember, injustice anywhere threatens justice everywhere. Have a good day.